Chapter 38. And Sus was taking water from a cistern, and while drawing up a double amphora with a rope, was singing a strange Lygian song in an undertone, looking meanwhile with delighted eyes at Lygia and Vinicius, who, among the cypresses in Linus's garden, seemed as white as two statues. Their clothing was not moved by the least breeze. A golden and lily-colored twilight was sinking on the world, while they were conversing in the calm of evening, each holding the other by the hand. May not some evil meet thee, Marcus, because thou hast left Antium without Caesar's knowledge? Asked Lygia. No, my dear, answered Vinicius. See, Caesar announced that he would shut himself in for 2 days with Terpnos, and compose new songs. He acts thus frequently, and at such times neither knows, nor remembers aught else. Moreover, what is Caesar to me, since I am near thee, and am looking at thee? I have yearned to such already, and these last night's sleep has left ink. More than once, when I dozed from weariness, I woke on a sudden, with a feeling, that danger was hanging over thee. At times I dreamed, that the relays of horses which were to bear me from Antium to Rome were stolen. Horses with which I passed that road more swiftly than any of Caesar's couriers. Besides, I could not live longer without thee. I love thee too much for that, my dearest. I knew that thou wert consing. Twice Ursus ran out, at my request, to the Carinae, and inquired for thee at thy house. Linus laughed at me, and Ursus also. It was, indeed, evident that as he had expected him, for instead of her usual dark dress, she wore a soft white stola, out of whose hodiful folds her arms and head emerged like primroses out of snow. A few ruddy anemones ornamented her hair. Vinicius pressed his lips to her hands. Then they sat on the stone bench amidst wild grapevines, and inclining toward each other, were silent, looking at the twilight whose last gleams were reflected in their eyes. The echoes of the quiet evening disturbed them completely. How calm it is here, and how beautiful the world is, said Vinicius, in a lowered voice. Tea, the night is wonderfully still. I feel happier than ever in life before. Tell me, Lygia, what is this? Never have I thought that there could be such love. I thought that envy was merely fire in the blood and desire. But now for the first time I see that it is possible to love with every drop of one's blood and every breath, and feel therewith such sweet and immeasurable calm, as if sleep and death had put the soul to rest. For me this is something new. I look on this calmness of the trees, and it seems to be within me. Now I understand for the first time that there I see a be happiness, of which people have not known thus far. Now I begin to understand why thou, and Pomponia Gra tilde Aena have such peace. Yes. Christ gives it. At that moment Lygia placed her beautiful face on his shoulder and said, Why, dear Marcus, but she was unable to continue. Joy, gratitude, and the feeling that at last Circe was free to have deprived her of voice, and her eyes were filled with tears of emotion. Tineus, embracing her slender form with his arm, drew her toward him and said, Aegia, may the moment be blessed in which I heard his name for the first time. I love thee, Marcus, said she then in a low voice. Both were silent again, unable to bring words from their overcharged breasts. The last lily reflections had died on the cypresses, and the garden began to be silver-like from the crescent of the moon. After a while Vinicius said, No. Barely had I entered here, barely had I kissed thy dear hands, when I read in thy eyes the question whether I had received the divine doctrine to which thou art attached, and whether I was baptized. No, I am not baptized yet, but knowest thou, my flower, why? Paul said to me, I have convinced thee that God came into the world, and gave himself to thee crucified for its salvation. But let Peter wash thee in the fountain of grace, he who first stretched his hands over thee and blessed thee. And I, my dearest, wish thee to witness thy baptism, and I wish Pomponia to be my godmother. This is why I am not baptized yet, thou? I believe in the Savior and in Philistine. Paul has convinced me, has converted me, and could it be otherwise? Flo, was I not to believe that Christ came into the world, since he, who was his disciple, says so, and Paul, to whom he appeared? How was I not to believe that he was God, since he rose from the dead? Others saw him in the city, and on the lake, and on the mountain. People saw him whose lips have not known the lie. I began to believe this the first time I heard Peter in the Strionum, for I said to myself even then, in the whole world any other man might lie, rather than this one who says, I saw. But I feared thy religion. It seemed to me that thy religion would take thee from me. I thought that there was neither wisdom, nor beauty, nor happiness in it. But today, when know it, what kind of man should I be, were I not to wish truth, to rule the world instead of falsehood, love instead of hatred, virtue instead of crime, faithfulness instead of unfaithfulness, mercy instead of vengeance? What sort of man would he be who would not choose, and wish the same? But thy religion teaches this. Others desire justice also, but thy religion is the only one which makes man's heart just, and besides makes it pure, like thine and Pomponia's, makes it faithful, like thine and Pomponia's. I should be blind were one not to see this, but if in addition Christ God has promised eternal life, and has promised happiness as immeasurable as the Almighty of God can give, what more can one wish? Were I to ask Seneca why he enjoins virtue, if wickedness brings more happiness, he would not be able to say anything sensible. But I know now that I ought to be virtuous, because virtue and love flow from Christ, and because, when death closes my eyes, I shall find life and happiness, I shall find myself and thee. Why not love, and accept a religion which both speaks the truth and destroys death? Who would not prefer good to evil? I thought thy religion opposed to happiness. Meanwhile Paul has convinced me, that not only does it not take away, but that it gives. All this hardly finds a place in my head, but I feel that it is true, for I have never been so happy, neither could I be, had I taken thee by force, and possessed thee in my house. Just see, thou hast said a moment since, I love thee, and I could not have won these words from thy lips with all the might of Rome. O Lydia, reason declares this religion divine, and the best, the heart feels it, and who can resist to such forces? Lydia listened, fixing on him her blue eyes, which in the light of the moon, were like mystic flowers, and begged like flowers. Yes, Marcus, that is true, said she, nestling her head more closely to his shoulder. And at that moment they felt immensely happy, for they understood that besides love they were united by another power, at once sweet and irresistible, by which love itself becomes endless, not subject to change, deceit, treason, or even death. Their hearts were filled with perfect certainty that, no matter what might happen, they would not cease to love and belong to each other. For that reason an unspeakable repose flowed in on their souls. Vinicius felt, besides, that love was not merely profound and pusk, but altogether new, such as the world had not known, and could not give. In his head all was combined in this love, Lydia, the teaching of Christ, the light of the moon resting calmly on the cypresses, and the still night, so that to him the whole universe seemed filled with it. After a while he said with a lowered arid quivering voice, colon, thou wilt be the soul of my soul, and the dearest in the world to me. Our hearts will heat together, we shall have one prayer and one gratitude to Christ. Oh my dear, to live together, to honor together the sweet God, and to know that, when death comes our eyes will open again, as after a pleasant sleep, to a new light, what better could be imagined? I only marvel that I did not understand this at first. And knowest thou what occurs to me now? That no one can resist this religion. In 200 or 300 years the whole world will accept it. People will forget Jupiter, and there will be no God except Christ, and no other temples but Christian. Who would not wish his own happiness? Ah! But I heard Paul's conversation with Petronius, and dost thou know what Petronius said at the end? That is not for me, but he could give no other answer. Repeat Paul's words to me, said Lydia. It was at my house one evening. Petronius began to speak playfully and to banter, as he does usually, whereupon Paul said to him, How canst thou deny, O wise Petronius, that Christ existed and rose from the dead, since thou wert not in the world at that time, but Peter and John saw him, and I saw him on the road to Damascus. Let thy wisdom show, first of all, then, that we are liars, and then only deny our testimony. Petronius answered, that he had no thought of denying, for he knew that many incomprehensible things were done, which trustworthy people affirmed. But the discovery of some new foreign god is one thing, said he, and the reception of his teaching another. I have no wish to know anything which may deform life and mar its beauty. Never mind whether our gods are true or not. They are beautiful, their rule is pleasant for us, and we live without care. Thou art willing to reject the religion of love, justice, and mercy through dread of the cares of life, replied Paul. But think, Petronius, is thy life really free from anxieties? Behold, neither thou nor any man among the richest and most powerful knows when he falls asleep at night, that he may not wake to a death sentence. But tell me, if C. Teucer professed this religion, which enjoins love and justice, would not thy happiness be more assured? Thou art alarmed about thy delight, but would not life be more joyous then? As to life's beauty and ornaments, if he have reared so many beautiful temples and statues to evil, revengeful, adulterous, and faithless divinities, what would he not do in honor of one God of truth and mercy? Thou art ready to praise thy lot, because thou art wealthy and living in luxury, but it was possible even in thy case to be poor and deserted, though coming of a great house, and then in truth it would have been better for thee if people confessed Christ. In Rome even wealthy parents, unwilling to toil at rearing children, cast them out of the house frequently. Those children are called alumni, and chance might have made thee an alumnus, like one of those. But if parents live according to our religion, this cannot happen. And hadst thou, at manhood's years, married a woman of thy love, thy wish would be to see her faithful till death. Meanwhile look around, what happens among you, what vileness, what shame, what bartering in the faith of wives. Nay, ye yourselves are astonished, when a woman appears whom ye call an avira of one husband, but I tell thee, that those women who carry Christ in their hearts will not break faith with their husbands, just as Christian husbands will keep faith with their wives. But ye are neither sure of rulers, nor fathers, nor wives, nor children, nor servants. The whole world is trembling before you, and ye are trembling before your own slaves, for ye know that any hour may raise an awful war against your oppression, such a war as has been raised more than once. Though rich, thou art not sure that the command may not come to thee tomorrow to leave thy wealth. Thou art young, but tomorrow it may be necessary for thee to die. Thou lovest, but treason is in wait for thee. Thou art enamored of villas and statues, but tomorrow power may thrust thee forth into the empty places of the Pandateria. Thou hast thousands of servants, but tomorrow these servants may let thy blood flow. And if that be the case, how canst thou be calm and happy, how canst thou live in delight? But I proclaim love, and I proclaim a religion which commands rulers to love their subjects, masters their slaves, slaves to serve with love, to do justice and be merciful, and at last it promises happiness boundless as a sea without end. How, then, Petronius, canst thou say that that religion spoils life, since it corrects, and since thou thyself wouldst be 100 times happier and more secure were it to embrace the world as Rome's dominion has embraced it? Thus discussed Paul, and then Petronius said, That is not for me. Feigning drowsiness, he went out, and when going added, I prefer my Eunice, O little Jew, but I should not wish to struggle with thee on the platform. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I listened to Paul's words with my whole soul, and when he spoke of our women, I magnified with all my heart, that religion from which thou hast sprung as a lily from a rich field in springtime. And I thought then, there is Poppaea, who cast aside two husbands for Nero, there is Calvia Crispinilla, there is Nigidia, there are almost all whom I know, save only Pomponia. They trafficked with faith and with oaths, but she and my own one will not desert, will not deceive, and will not quench the fire, even though all in whom I place trust should desert and deceive me. Hence I said to thee in my soul, how can I show gratitude to thee, if not with love and honor? Didst thou feel that in Antium I spoke, and conversed with thee all the time, as if thou hadst been at my side? I love thee 100 times more for having escaped me from Caesar's house. Neither do I care for Caesar's house any longer. I wish not its luxury and music, I wish only thee. Say a word, we will leave Rome, to settle somewhere at a distance. Without removing her head from his shoulder, Lygia, as if meditating, raised her eyes to the silver tops of the cypresses, and answered, very well, Marcus. Thou art written to me of Sicily, where Aulus wishes to settle in old age. And Venius interrupted her with delight. True, my dear. Our lands are adjacent. That is a wonderful coast, where the climate is sweeter, and the nights still brighter than in Rome, odoriferous and transparent. Their life and happiness are almost one and the same. And he began then, to dream of the future. There we may forget anxieties. In groves, among olive trees, we shall walk, and rest in the shade. O Lygia! What a life to love, and cherish each other, to look at the sea together, to look at the sky together, to honor together a kind God, to do in peace what is just and true. Both were silent, looking into the future, only he drew her more firmly toward him, and the knight's ring on his finger glittered meanwhile in the rays of the moon. In the pan occupied by the poor toiling people, all were sleeping, no murmur broke the silence. Wilt thou permit me to see Pomponia? Asked Lygia. Yes, dear one. We will invite them to our house, or go to them ourselves. If thou wish, we can take Peter the Apostle. Ty is bowed down with age and work. Paul will visit us also, he will convert all us Plautius. And as soldiers found colonies in distant lands, so we will found a colony of Christians. Lygia raised her hand, and, taking his palm, wished to press it to her lips. But he whispered, as if fearing to frighten happiness, No, Lygia, no. It is I who honor thee and exalt thee. Give me thy hands. I love thee. He had pressed his lips to her hands, white as jessamine, and for a time they heard only the beating of their own hearts. There was not the slightest movement in the air. The cypresses stood as motionless as if they too were holding breath in their breasts. All at once the silence was broken by an unexpected thunder, deep, and as if coming from under the earth. A shiver ran through Lygia's body. Vinicius stood up, and said, Ions are roaring in the vivarium. Both began to listen. Now the first thunder was answered by a second, a third, a tenth, from all sides and divisions of the city. In Rome several thousand lions were quartered at times in various arenas, and frequently in the NIGHT tilde turn they approached the grating, and, leaning their gigantic heads against it, gave utterance to their yearning for freedom and the desert. Thus they began on this occasion, and, answering one another in the stillness of night, they filled the whole city with roaring. There was something so indescribably gloomy and terrible in those roars that Lygia, whose bright and calm visions of the future were scattered, listened with a straitened heart, and with wonderful fear and sadness. But Vinicius encircled her with his arm, and said, Hear not, dear one. The games are at hand, and all the Bavaria are crowded. Then both entered the house of Linus, accompanied by the thunder of lions, growing louder and louder. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.